Resources Committee to order. Today's Wednesday, Monday, February 23rd. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:33 p.m. Committee members present: Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Stoltz, Senator Machicki, Senator Coghill, and myself, Senator Giesel. Senator Wadakowski is excused today, and Senator Stidman probably will be joining us shortly. So thanks, Anne, for being our recording secretary again today. We have Jessica on the audio, and Ike is our committee aide today, as usual. So today we're going to start out with the governor's appointees to the Board of Game. So they're both online, and so we'll interview them. And then after that, we'll review Senate Joint Resolution 13. So I'm going to take this in alphabetical order on terms of our appointees, and we'll start with Teresa Alba. Teresa, are you online?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can very clearly. Great. Thank you and welcome. So we all here on the committee have your application in front of us, printed out. And so what I would ask you to do is just introduce yourself to us. Let us know just a brief review of your resume that qualifies you for the position. And then let us know why you're interested in serving on the Board of Game.
Certainly. Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Teresa Sager Alba. Those of you who also serve on the Senate State Affairs Committee, please bear with me because this will be a repeat of what you heard last Monday, and this will just be maybe a couple of minutes. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, born and raised in Fairbanks, and I've lived in a 24-by-24 dry log cabin on the Toke Cutoff near Mentasta Pass since 1984. I was raised in a hunting and fishing family, and this remains a very important part of my life. My husband Bill and I spend a significant share of our time hunting, fishing, and trapping, and we fill our freezer every year with wild game and fish. We also have two small greenhouses, and we raise a garden, so we add to the protein supply with plenty of vegetables. In terms of my employment, from 1983 to 1995, I worked for the state legislature, and since that time I've worked for a private company called Summit Consulting Services, which is an engineering and construction management firm, and we're based south of Toke here on the Toke Cutoff, and we also have offices in Fairbanks and Anchorage. On a personal level, I've devoted volunteer time to efforts and organizations to help protect and enhance hunting, fishing, trapping, Second Amendment rights, and the public's right to enjoy outdoor experiences and to connect with their natural environment. And I hope that my average outdoor Alaskan's background has been a positive contribution to my service on the game board and to the people who value wildlife in their own lives. I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve in this position for the past 6 years, and I certainly appreciate the committee's consideration of my reappointment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Teresa. Committee members, any questions for Ms. Alba? Senator Stoltz.
I just, Madam Chair, I'd like just to note for the record, I don't believe it's a conflict, but full disclosure, I have served on the Alaska Outdoor Council as an officer and as a board member, along with Ms. Sager Alba, and I've been involved in many NRA activities with her, and I've enjoyed the hospitality of she and her husband on that very maybe she describes it as small and rustic, but a very homey and hospitable cabin on the Toke Cutoff. So I want to know that I fully endorse this candidate, but I want to put on the record, which I neglected to do in state affairs, that I have had a long association with her on many of the activities that make her an outstanding candidate.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Stoltz. Any questions? Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you, through the chair. Teresa, what do you see as the major challenges moving forward on the Board of Game?
Yes, through the chair. Thank you, Senator Costello. There are a number of major challenges. currently, we are continually reviewing a number of proposals with regard to intensive management to help put more moose and caribou on the tables of Alaskans. There's always some controversy involved in those types of proposals. However, I will say that because of the success of those programs in recent years, a lot of the opposition that we initially received has really waned a great deal, and I think that those programs, by and large, have been successful. The ones that that have not shown a great deal of success, we're looking carefully at either suspending or ending those programs, because we want to make sure that we're putting the state's resources to the places where we get the best bang for our buck, so to speak. We currently also have some fairly significant issues in front of us with regard to sheep, doll sheep management. And I would say that an ongoing issue of at least some degree of contention would be the antlerless moose reauthorizations. Those are annual. There is always at least some degree of opposition or public dissatisfaction with those. There's also a great deal of public satisfaction and support for them. And so I don't want to go on forever here, but I would say those are at least three of the significant issues and challenges that the board has to deal with going forward.
Very good. Further questions? I had one, Teresa. So landscape conservation cooperatives, these are programs apparently to coordinate science at a landscape scale in terms of changing in climate and things like that. Does the Board of Game ever deal with these kinds of federal issues from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service?
When that specific program, the name of it is not familiar to me, but we certainly do pay attention when the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is looking at or developing plans that are going to affect harvest, wildlife harvest, and they are presently in the process I believe it's a rulemaking issue that is similar to what the National Park Service just recently proposed, which was just the public comment period for that just closed in February. The Game Board is going to be, we issued a very strong letter to the Park Service on that rulemaking, and we are going to issue a subsequent letter to the Fish and Wildlife Service on their rulemaking. The details of their rulemaking is a bit different, so the letters are going to be different, but in essence, they both take significant issue with the federal agencies basically failing to honor the provisions of ANILCA.
Very good. I'm glad to know that Board of Game is on top of that. Any other questions from committee members? Yes, Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Alba, Senator Sullivan has indicated a priority of his is to enhance and increase access to hunting on federal lands. How might the Board of Game help our congressional delegation on that mission? What expertise and what other support? And how can we aid you both as the legislative branch?
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, I think the Board of Game can probably provide some valuable information to the legislature and to the congressional delegation with regard to what the access challenges are at this point, and areas where access is important, and where we can use some assistance on the federal level with maintaining or enhancing access. We hear from a lot of Alaskans on those issues. I think we can probably provide assistance in that regard. We'd probably just need to make sure the dialogue and the lines of communication are open, but I think we would be, I think I'm safe in speaking for the majority of the board or all, perhaps all of the board members in telling you that we certainly would be glad to have that dialogue and provide assistance where we can.
Very good. Well, I'm not seeing any other questions for you right now, Ms. Alba. So if you would just kind of stand by in case someone came up with any additional questions. What I'm going to do is next go to Mr. Fanning, interview him, and then we'll take public comment. So you're welcome to continue listening in.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Fanning, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep, there you go. Yes, welcome. So you probably overheard the interview with Ms. Alba. If you would do the same, please. We have your application here in front of us. If you could just review your qualifications and then why you're interested in the position.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Karen. She's a pretty tough act to follow, but I'll do my best. Quick introduction of myself is, my name is Kip Fanning. I currently live in Yakutat and have been here since middle school. Prior to that, my family lived in Fairbanks with the exception of a couple short stints in Juneau while my dad was in the legislature and the Senate. I feel honored to be considered for this position by the governor, and I was raised by a big game guide, but I grew up in a subsistence village. And so with that, I feel I can have an open mind and be an asset to all sides, as well as the resource of the state of Alaska. And I'm interested in taking this position for the future of Alaska's resources and the people. I have a couple of young kids, and I've lived a wonderful life with the resources, and I'd like to see that passed on to my kids.
Very good. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Fanning? Senator Costello.
Thank you, through the chair. And out of fairness, Mr. Fanning, could you answer the question I asked the previous applicant, and that is, what do you see as the major challenges that the board is facing in the near future?
You know, in all honesty here, I don't know a lot of the issues that are at hand. I know of some of them, but I don't know of all of them. And I think one of the biggest ones is just going to be the management of the resource and to have an open mind of all parties. And that's what I hope to do and then, you know, kind of strive to do is to be open and honest to all parties. And so I really can't answer as to that particular question means that I'm not familiar with the exact issues.
All right. Follow-up, Senator Costello?
No, thank you. I think that's what we're hoping for is someone open-minded on all of our board. So I appreciate the answer.
Very good. Further questions for Mr. Fanning? Well, I'll ask again. You heard Ms. Alba talk about the National Park Service and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service actually proposing some hunting regulations on federal land. Have you been following any of those kinds of issues, Mr. Fanning?
No, I have not been following those particular issues. I do know that growing up in Yakutat, we've hunted on federal land most of my life, and so I mean I am familiar with dealing with the Park Service and Forest Service. But as far as particular issues that are at hand at this moment, no, I'm not familiar with them.
Okay, all right. Let's see if there are any other questions. All right, seeing none, let's go to public testimony. Here in the room, Thor Stacy is signed up to testify, so I'll welcome Mr. Stacy to the microphone. Welcome, if you would identify yourself for the record and then give us your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Thor Stacy, and I'm here representing the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. I'll be very brief. We've had the good fortune to watch Ms. Sarah Alba during the May Board of Game meetings and many hours of deliberation and taking public comment. And I can say that we support her reappointment to the Board of Game. There are some differences that a group like ours has with sometimes how a resource is valued, you know, just trying to describe what the maximum benefit is and how things go and how the game should be allocated. But With those differences aside, we can say that Ms. Seguralba is a very strong work ethic. She's very fair and honest with the public and with the process, in that she is open to dissenting views and very receptive to input of all kinds. And so with those things in mind, I don't think you can do much better. We also stand in support of Mr. Fanning. We have no experience with him as a board member or in a public forum. I think his father was a member of our association at one time, but that doesn't have any bearing on any recent memory or current position. One thing that we're particularly excited about is he is has a business of his own, and trying to be constructive. Alaska's professional hunters are small business owners, and having small business owners, whether they're in a hunting background or not, that's helpful for us communicating our perspective on the resource and evaluation of that resource. So we stand in support of having a small business owner on the board.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Stacy? All right, seeing none, thank you. So next we'll go to the Matt Sue LRO. Rod Arno is there. Mr. Arno, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yep. Committee members, my name is Rod Arno. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Outdoor Council, which is a statewide organization, as you well know, that is crusader for Alaskan lifestyle that deals with outdoors, gathering wild food sources. I've spent a considerable amount of time at the board over the last couple decades, and my experience that Teresa Seguralba comes the most prepared of any of the board members that I've had the experience to work with. And not only is she prepared and well aware of the proposal, she does her own background work outside of the department, finding what the conditions are and what the conflicts are among the users. And we really appreciate that. And above all things, that she is willing to follow the rule of law. And a lot of times that's lost on the board of game, where members have their own opinions of how things would be, as opposed to remembering that they are an arm of the legislature with statutes and regulations to follow. AOC strongly supports her reconfirmation to the Board of Game. And as for Kip Fanning, you know, I knew his dad. I appreciated him. He's an outdoor person, and AOC would appreciate that. And hopefully Mr. Fanning, if he does get confirmed, will also get his copy of the codified and the statutes that are the founding base that regulation should be built on, and that makes for a very constructive board process. Thank you for your time.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Arno. Any questions for Mr. Arno? All right, seeing none. Let's see. Next we'll go to the Fairbanks LIO. Mike Tinker is signed on to testify. Mr. Tinker, can you hear us?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, loud and clear. Welcome.
Thank you. Chairman Giesel, members of the Center of Resources, I am Mike Tinker. I live in Esther, Alaska. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Association, which is an organization founded in the interior, whose mission is to support the use of Alaska's resources by Alaskans, and that's very similar to the Alaska Outdoor Council. I would hazard to guess that probably most of our members are AOC members also. We ask you to recommend I'm going to start with Mr. Fanning today, to confirm Kip Fanning as a member of the Board of Game. The Alaska statesmen and women who drafted the sideboards for members did not intend our boards of fish and game to be made up of hunting and fishing experts or professionals. The language is clear that an applicant for the Board of Game should have knowledge and experience with hunting habitats, environment, and issues that provide a base for making informed decisions on these regulatory matters. The term of appointment is 3 years, which implies to me that there would be an opportunity to bring new members who are maybe not expert in all these issues and bring new questions and ideas into service. We find that Kip Fanning has exactly those qualifications, and his background of a life experience and a professional experience have given him the background and the detail he needs to understand the issues once he gets there and to make good conservation decisions. Mr. Fanning has recognized the really steep learning curve that lies ahead, and he's ready and has agreed that he's ready to take up that challenge. He is not a professional guide, which we also think is in his favor in this case. We believe his common sense, experience, and living in a subsistence-oriented community will serve him well as a member of the board again. Throughout her service on the board, Teresa Sager Albach has been a caretaker of the constitutional and statutory obligations the board should, but does not always follow. She always comes prepared for every issue, usually having several meetings with the public and community advisory committees, as well as having read the hundreds of pages of information that are required by each meeting. Having lived in a more urban environment in Fairbanks for many years and now living many years in the bush, give her a unique perspective. Her attention to detail, especially in the emotion and turmoil that accompanies some issues before the board, is not matched by any other present member. She always makes herself available to the public for discussions, regardless of the issue. Her background as a hunter, fisher, and living in a subsistence environment give her the experience to understand and appreciate the passion of those coming before the board. She is one who is looking out for compliance to process, regulations, and contradictions in the discussions of the board. Our organization would like to thank Governor Walker for discussing her reappointment with us prior to, and then thank him for making that appointment. We ask you to recommend the Senate confirm Teresa Sager Albach as a member of the board again. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tinker. Any questions for Mr. Tinker from committee members? Seeing none, let the record reflect that Senator Stedman has joined us. Welcome. Next we have in Fairbanks, Al Barrett, who is wishing to testify. Mr. Barrett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, very nicely. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Al Barrett from Fairbanks. I'm representing the Fairbanks Advisory Committee today. And I thank you, Madam Chair, for holding this meeting and members of the committee. Our committee voted unanimously to support Teresa Sager Albach in the reconfirmation for the Board of Game. And we feel that, you know, every now and then we get a state volunteer to serve, in this case to the Board of Game, who's absolutely very knowledgeable, very well prepared for the meetings. She attends, you know, advisory committees at least twice a year. It seems like she's in the Fairbanks Advisory Committee, just observing, maybe answering a few questions or two. We also known her to visit the Anchorage, the Matsu, the Toka, and Metasta ACs. So she gets really involved with the local issues and you know, just the local things that are going on, so she can be better prepared to vote on a proposal or not. She diligently protects subsistence opportunities. And with her background, she understands the importance of subsistence to Alaskans. She lives the lifestyle, and she knows the allocation law and just, you know, constantly protects us for that. She's very conservation-minded. She's always thinking of the resource first and not trying to improperly or imbalance the game populations. And so we really appreciate that. As far as Kip Fanning goes, we supported Kip Fanning. We didn't take an official vote on it, but we've been talking, and since his appointment by the governor, we'll be able to comment more on it. With Teresa on board there, if the legislature, you know, deems her good, you know, she'd be an excellent mentor for new board members and board members with less experience. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Barrett. Any questions for Mr. Barrett? All right, seeing none. Is there anyone else here in the room that wishes to testify on these appointees? All right, seeing none. Is there anyone else online? No one else online. So with that, I'll close public testimony. So, any further questions, committee members, for Ms. Albach or Mr. Fanning? All right, seeing none, in accordance with AS 3905080, the Resources Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Pardon me. Board of Game, Kip Fanning, Yakutat, Teresa Sager, Albach, Toke. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. So at this time, I'll pass this report document to committee members for signature, and we'll take a brief at ease while that's executed. All right, we'll come back to order. So the next item on our agenda is the review of Senate Joint Resolution Number 13, this being offered by Senator John Coghill. So I will turn it over to Senator Coghill for presenting the bill. Thank you,
Madam Chair. I'll just what I'd like to do is make a couple of brief opening remarks and have Chad Hutchison, who's got a presentation prepared for you. At the highest level, you go all the way back to statehood and all the discussion on why we became a state and our ability to support ourselves and our willingness to work with the federal government on federal lands, right? And so the Chukchi leases are the issue at hand, but the context to it is we have kind of the Anwar resolution being taken care of by this president. We have, and this particular resolution speak directly to the president with first what I consider the strongest language we can get, and that is cease and desist from taking the oil-rich leases off the market. And Chad will be able to tell you what that is, how we will describe that. But I mean, we have the National Petroleum Reserve. That was the Naval Petroleum Reserve. Now this president is trying to treat it like wilderness area, right? And I think we need to challenge that too. But at this point, what happened in January was taking oil-rich leases if you look at it, it's the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. And they forgot the energy part. They're managing it based on wilderness by taking these oil-rich leases off the market. So I think we need to speak as vehemently, strongly as we can to the president. And with that, I'll have the staff, really, he's a majority staff member. He's just working out of my office, who's worked on this for the majority. But it just happens to have my name on it. But I've been passing this around, getting the kind of support I need to stand up and say to the president, we want oil development for the benefit of America, the benefit of Alaska, and these oil-rich leases could benefit us the way you're doing it, especially with these leases that will be specifically named. I think is it to the detriment economically of Alaska and is a mismanagement of the energy potential of America. So that's the strongest statement I can make on it at this point. And with that, I'll let the kinder, gentler man speak to the issue in specifics.
Very good. Welcome, Mr. Hutchison.
And thank you for that. Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Chad Hutchison, and I work under the direction of Senator Coghill. And does the committee want to go over the CS before we go further?
I think that would be a good idea. Yes, thank you.
And we worked with the Senate Resource Chair regarding a CS. After furthering conversations with Senator Murkowski's office, we talked with Michael Pawlowski about some of the specifics related to the OCS issue. And we thought that further refinement of the language in the resolution was necessary because of those conversations. We also talked with our friends at the Alaska Oil and Gas Association that gave us some insight as to specific language, and so that's why you see the CS before you today.
Which, Madam Chair, if you want, we can actually make a motion to have it in front of us.
That would be delightful.
And that is the E version. So, Madam Chair, I'd move that the CS or Senate Joint Resolution 13 Resources, which is the E version, 29LS047/E, be adopted as our working document.
Thank you. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the version E is adopted as our working document.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to go through some of the changes and talk about some of the specifics related to the CS. As Senator Coggill stated, the resolution was designed to be in opposition to the recent restrictions from the federal executive branch as it relates to the Chukchi and the Beaufort Seas. There's three big action points that distinguishes this resolution, and I think the committee should take note of. Number one, we're concerned about future leases in the Chukchi and the Beaufort. Number two, we're worried about active leases and whether the oil companies will have the ability to renew those active leases, even though theoretically Boehm has stated that active leases are not affected. The concern is that going forward that they may not be renewed, though. That's the key distinction. And the third action point is concerns about mitigation. If you specifically, as it relates to the Hannah Shoal section of the Chukchi Sea, which we'll see on the maps in just a few moments, the concern is that the mitigation efforts related to these designations will make it cost prohibitive for exploration, production, development, things like that. So those are the three big action points as it relates to SJR 13. So I'm going to go through a few slides. You should have all the material that was given to you in the handouts. They can clarify as to what you're looking at. We're going to start with the Beaufort Sea. You can see that there's a lot of different colors, and I'll go through and explain some of the items as we move forward. The large blue area by the Beaufort Sea, you see at the north of Kaktovik and in Barrow, that's the high petroleum potential area. Let me expand that a little bit. And that's the area where they think that there's the highest petroleum potential. You'll see a lot of green squares and you'll see yellow squares. The green squares are historic leases that the oil companies have had before, and they call them historic because as of 2015, they're not exploring them anymore. But they did exist at one point in time. The real important part for consideration is the yellow leases. Those are the ones where the active leases where you have ongoing activity of the oil companies. In the Beaufort, you're going to see by Kaktovik and Barrow a red outline, and this is further distinguished in your materials that were handed out. And the red outline is the areas where the federal government, Boehm, under the Department of Interior, at the recommendation of President Obama, has followed through and allowed a restriction going forward in 2017 through 2022, which is when the lease sales are up. So here's a little bit clearer picture. If you look at your monitors and look at the materials you provide, this doesn't have the clutter in it. This just shows you what the designated restricted areas are going to be. As you can see, Kaktovik and Barrow both have those areas. Going back real quickly, I do want to point this out. You'll notice that no active leases are in those areas. These are actually carryovers from previous administrations. They have designated those areas before as restricted areas, and you see that no active leases are included in those areas. So here's another picture of the Beaufort Sea, just a little bit closer. The Chukchi Sea is really the important designated area. As you can see, there's a lot of activity going on. We'll start with the large blue section is the high petroleum potential areas. You're going to see a lot more active leases in the center of those areas. Of particular pattern is that yellow circle. That was the study area for the Hannah Shoal. You'll see in further documents that that's actually the new area that President Obama has put off for restrictions. And that has multiple effects on active and ongoing leases from a number of different companies, Shell and Repsoil being the most important ones for our purposes. I want to go through and explain just a few things that you're looking at on this map here. You see the red line, that is the 25-mile buffer zone is what they call it. That's a holdover that's existed since the areas were designated, and it continues for 2017 through 2022. You'll see that there's no active leases in those areas, but it does intercede with high petroleum potential blue areas. You'll also see that the subsistence area around Barrow for whaling, there's no historic or active leases in that area, but it's just something to be considerate of and something that is going to carry forward going through 2017, 2022. They did want to include that as part of the restricted area. The controversy is really over Hannah Shoal, that yellow circle, because it's at least half of it, according to that diagram, demonstrates that it's in a high petroleum area, and you are looking at active and historical leases in that area. So that's what it looks like. This is the page that was provided by BOEM and the White House. That's what they expect to restrict going forward. It's a blue area. It's not quite a circle, obviously. It's got a different kind of amoeba shape. But the concern is that you have Shell, who's got, and this is information that we've discussed with AOGA going forward. The concern is you have three leases that are adjacent that Shell has, and then you have seven leases that are existing leases that are active within that withdrawn outline with Repsol, and you have another five that are immediately adjacent to that blue area on the screen. And all those leases, they cover similar prospects. And the concern is, number one, for the active leases in the area, even though supposedly the federal government is saying that the active leases are not effective, that you're uncertain about the ability to renew in 2022, so that creates uncertainty with the oil industry. And then, number two, you're concerned that the mitigation efforts that they're going to impose in the Hannah Shoal area, because this is for environmental reasons, that's the reason why they've designated this particular area, you're concerned that the mitigation costs will be so high that it proves to be a de facto unilateral effect on active leases. Just, you know, and even though they technically say that it doesn't affect active leases, it's the same as Senator Coggett was talking about when you talk about de facto wilderness in ANWR, where they say that it has to have a confirmation by Congress. But the other side of the story is that the federal agency will manage it as wilderness, even though it didn't pass Congress, and that's in violation of NILCA in regards of many. So that's kind of the concern going forward, is that you have, even though they'll come out and say that the active leases isn't affected, those are the bilateral consequences that have some sort of effect that concerns many people. So here's just a little bit clear. This is another diagram. It shows particularly the 25-mile buffer zone, the subsistence area by Barrow, the continuation of that, and then the Hannah Shoal area in the center there, in those high petroleum potential areas. And there's one more picture. It's just a close-up. So with that, I don't have anything further with regards to the presentation. I just wanted to make sure it was clear to the committee members exactly what you're talking about when you're talking about restrictions in the Chukchi and the Beaufort Sea.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Hutchinson. Senator Machicki, did you have a question?
I do, Madam Chair. Chad, through the chair, why Hannah Shoal?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, the belief is that Hannah Shoal is a high-value area for marine life. That's what's been communicated to that's communicated from the agencies to the state and to the affected stakeholders.
Follow up, Senator Machicki?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Chair.
Further questions, Senator Costello?
Thank you. And through the chair, Chad, on page 1, lines 10 and 11, it talks about where the president has alleged authority for his action, and I'm just curious if you could explain what he is using as his basis for the authority that he thinks he has.
Senator Costello, through the chair, he does have the ability, and I'll read 1341A, the President of the United States may from time to time withdraw from disposition any of the unleased lands of the outer continental shelf, and that's the authority that he uses to make these withdrawals, and that's why they can say that the active leases aren't affected, because it's the ones that are unleased. The problem is that also you'll see that up there that there's a concern that it's going to have an adverse consequence as it pertains to future leasing, and that the currently existing leases, if it's a high area of concern for environmental reasons or for marine mammals or for other marine life, that the mitigation prospects for the companies that want to develop the area will be so high it will just be cost prohibitive, and that they will have to look at other potential areas. But that's the authority that he rests on.
Any follow-up, Senator Costello?
No, thank you.
All right. Any further questions? I have one. So, Mr. Hutchinson, it almost feels like this area that's being excluded there in Hannah Shoal is almost a ocean zoning step. Would you agree with that characterization, or am I overstating it?
Senator Giesel, through the chair, there's many that would probably agree with that analysis, that it is a de facto ocean zoning management tool.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Stedman.
Yes, Madam Chairman. Just in the aggregate, I don't know how many resolutions we want to send off dealing with, with 1002 and the Chukchi and maybe it is this one, but I think we should take into consideration the National Petroleum Council is going to have a report out in March. Talking about the opening in an environmentally sensitive way of the offshore. And I'm not so sure that we shouldn't try to combine a resolution with that. But that would hinder the ability of this to be, sent within the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'll leave that up to the sponsor, Senator Coghill.
I think that's an excellent idea, and I think that this is one of the things that, first of all, we need to make the communication a live communication, mm-hmm. because as with other actions the President has done, they're unilateral actions that affect the ability of Alaska to be a participant in, the federal areas. But we also have rule of law that we can appeal to under the Outer Continental Shelves Lands Act, and I think we have competing authorities here between what the President is doing and what the whole idea of the submerged lands requirements are, which we should partner with the Petroleum Council, I think, on. So I'm very, very willing to do that. It's just that the shoes are dropping rather fast, and if you don't comment, then by way of silence, you're acquiescing in many ways. And so I think we need to speak, and that's why I put the word vehemently in there, because I think the idea that the ocean management void of the energy question is unwise. Certainly, there's nothing going to happen in the Hannah Shoal or in the Beaufort or Chukchi Sea that is going to, on purpose, thwart marine mammals. Because you got the Marine Mammal Protection Act you have to work through. So I think at this point, to take those leases under question and put a big cloud over them, I think is exactly the wrong way to do the ocean energy management. So, but I agree with you. Working with the Petroleum Council, let's do it. I'll work with you.
Very good. I think you make a good point, Senator Cotterkill, that the shoes are dropping fast. And certainly the President hasn't waited to hear from the National Petroleum Council. And they may have some very wise advice, but he hasn't waited for them either. And so I think we do need to respond, and perhaps we modify it after seeing the report. But to tarry is assent almost with what he's done, consent with what he's done.
In fact, Madam Chair,
yes,
in the resolution we comment on the fact that it was without public comment that he did it.
Yes.
So it's not even public participation at all.
Yes. Very good. Further comments from committee members? Any questions for Mr. Hutchinson or Senator Coghill? Yes, Senator Stedman.
Just a wordsmith.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair. Line 30, page 3. There's this further resolve that the Alaska State Legislature vehemently opposes any attempt by the federal administration to prohibit. I'd suggest we contemplate striking without adequate public process, just strike that, the future options of oil and gas, and make it more point blank.
So
but that's just an option, Madam Chairman.
Just to clarify your suggestion, then, you would be deleting without adequate public process. Is that true, or did I misunderstand?
In my opinion, we should have access to those hydrocarbon resources, period. We, the citizens of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
And we're part of that, I think, at least.
You're making that, I assume, as an amendment?
As a suggestion. It's kind of
okay.
Just wordsmithing. It might be a little bit too strong for some people, but that's fine.
I'll look to Senator Coghill. Comment?
Well, if we're going to accuse the president of doing it without public process, it's going to be pretty hard for us to do, to demand it without public process. I understand, because the emphatic statement is, look, don't take these off of the list. So I tend to agree with the process there. I mean, the goal. But there's no way we're going to do any of this without public process, in my view. And so I'm game. Maybe the technician has come across those words. I mean, they're not put in there lightly, in my view. So, you know, Chad, has that been you could respond to the public process?
Senator Coghill and Senator Sedman, through the chair, the initial draft of the resolution did not have without adequate public process. That was one of the recommendations that we had with regards to some of the conversations we had with Senator Murkowski's office, to just make sure that's included, that they basically initiated a policy. They have a comment period, but it came as a surprise to many. So it was recommended to us to just include without adequate public process, but I think we're open to revisions if you see fit.
All right, great. Senator Stoltz.
Well, actually, Senator Sedman, Madam Chair, is backing down. I'm resolute in his original intent, and I think it reads much better without that. And frankly, we've had a lot of pro forma public processes that haven't, we can say, adequate. I know lobby groups that use that term adequate in describing things they'd like in the legislative process, and you know, it's developed a subjective sense of it. That I think it reads elegantly without that section in there. And but, anyway, I want to unsquishify him. He's backing down.
Madam Chair.
Very good, Senator Coghill.
We took it under advisement and we put it in there. But a resolution is a tough tool anyway, and so you want to be as direct as you can. So, you know, I'm open to taking those words out because the directness vehemently opposed are things that, in any case, we get resolutions from towns, and the more emphatic the language, the better for us. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm game to do that.
All right. So are you proposing amending your resolution?
Well,
Senator Coghill.
I noticed that Senator Sedman almost choked when he started talking, so I don't know the words without adequate public process.
Correct, and that would include the commas both before and after the phrase. Is there?
I'd make a motion that we take those words out, starting from the comma without adequate public process, to our version.
All right, is there objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Very good. All right, is there anything further, committee members? All right, seeing none, we do have someone in the audience who wishes to testify on this resolution. So I'll welcome Kara Moriarty to the table. Welcome, Kara.
Thank you, Senator. Well, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kara Moriarty, and I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. We are the professional trade association that represents the oil and gas industry, and our mission is to foster for the long term, which I think is important in this conversation, the long term viability of the oil and gas industry for the benefit of all Alaskans. As you know, our members have been operating in the Arctic for more than 40 years. And oil and gas development is the backbone of Alaska's economy. And as the largest undeveloped energy basin in the United States, the Arctic Outer Continental Shelf, or the OCS, is truly the next generation of energy security for our country and our state. Just to briefly review, the Arctic OCS holds enormous resource. It's a mega, mega resource. It's estimated by the Department of Interior at approximately 27 billion barrels of oil and 132 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. And in comparison, I don't need to tell this room, but for the audience maybe watching on gavel to gavel, as a reminder, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System, or TAPS, has carried more than 17 billion barrels in just over 30-some years. So truly, OCS development in the Beaufort and Chukchi could feed into TAPS and maintain its viability for years to come. Additionally, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the importance of jobs. And obviously, oil and gas development in the OCS means more jobs for Alaskans. It is predicted to produce an annual average of 35,000 direct and indirect jobs over the next 50 years in Alaska alone. And those jobs would likely represent a total payroll over that time span of $70 billion. Since 1971, 84 wells have been drilled in the Arctic OCS, all without incident. Industry has worked with communities to incorporate traditional knowledge and decision-making, establish conflict avoidance agreements, and impose seasonal drilling limitations. New regulations and further research has further ensured that development and environmental protection can coexist. And planned drilling areas are rather shallow, especially on the area that the map is on right now, similar to nearshore Gulf of Mexico. Mr. Hutchinson from Senator Coghill's office did a great job of summarizing our concern with the current five-year leasing plan that's before us for comment and the concern we have with some of the restrictions, because it's a lot of unknown. There's a lot of unknown built in to the plan. As the sea ice stays open longer and other countries move forward with exploration and development in their waters and transportation through the ice-free Northwest Passage, our Alaska's Arctic seas will be left largely unattended, potentially. With little infrastructure in place, communities along Alaska's northern coast will be at the greatest risk with no ability to respond. So development of the Arctic OCS for exploration and development would also bring that needed infrastructure to a very rural onshore area, and the industry's continued presence would provide security and response capabilities should they be needed. So it goes without saying, AOGA very much supports the Senate Joint Resolution Number 13, and we thank the sponsor and the supporters for introducing it. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Wonderful. Thank you, Kara. Any questions for Ms. Moriarty? Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you, through the chair. Could we have her comments submitted in writing for the record?
Would that be possible?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah,
I will take it. All right. Any other questions for Ms. Moriarty? All right. Seeing none. Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to testify on the resolution? Seeing no one, is there anyone online? No one online either. Great. So we will close public testimony. All right. Any further comments from the bill sponsor or Mr. Hutchinson?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
First of all, I think it's time to speak because of the national move, but it's also something that we speak up for Alaskans. I know that, like on Wainwright Village, the little village that's right on the coast there, they were anticipating how they would be supportive to that particular industry. They also were very happy that their input was taken into the timing of the movement of rigs to allow their best hunting and fishing times. And so And yet they were really looking forward to that. And it's a little bit like the Eisenbeck issue. Once this happens, you really strand a group of people who are really looking forward to development and still keeping their traditional ways right there in a very sensitive part of Alaska. So I don't think it should be lost on people that we're not saying go in there and do anything. We're just saying those leases in an oil-rich area should not come under the cloud that this president just put them under. So with that, I thank you for the time to summarize.
Great. Thank you very much. I think the folks in Point Lay were also looking forward to the opportunities. Good. Well, Senator Costello, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move Reporter 29-LS0471/ECHO from committee with individual committee recommendations as amended, with individual committee recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Catch.
Thank you. Are there any objections?
Everybody choked up around here, though.
Pardon me. Seeing no objections, the Senate Joint Resolution 13, version E, is passed from this committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the transmittal documents. Welcome back on the record. This ends our agenda for today. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 25th. We're going to have two meetings that day. A joint overview of the mining industry with the House Resources. That will be held in the Senate Finance Committee room at noon. Okay. And then we'll have our regular meeting in the afternoon, beginning at 3:30. We'll hear from the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation on its extraction industry report. So with that, we'll adjourn the meeting. Let the record reflect the time is 4:30 p.m. Thank you.